everyone, and welcome to another episode of Horror Homeroom Conversations. I'm Elizabeth Irwin.
I'm Gwen Hoffman.
And I'm Dawn Keatley.
And in today's episode, it's an old-school horror comedy romp with Matthew Goodhue's Slaughterhouse. The plot, what little there is of it, revolves around Alpha, a homicidal three-toed sloth who is abducted from her home in the Panamanian jungle by poachers. Upon killing Oliver, one of the poachers, she is taken in by Emily, who believes Alpha just might be her ticket to the sorority house presidency. But when Alpha discovers Emily looking chummy with Oliver in an Instagram post, she unleashes her fury on the unsuspecting sorority house. With some fans and critics lambasting the film as the dumbest story ever committed to film, and others declaring it the best horror film of the year, Slaughterhouse is, to put it mildly, divisive. But why? We're breaking it all down today with spoilers, so stay tuned.
Wasn't it you who said it was the best horror film of the year?
Listen.
Dawn did not even wait.
I mean, she just jumped in. Guns blazing.
I did not see any other critics calling it the best horror film of the year.
I listened to Pop Culture Happy Hour, which is an NPR podcast, and I forget his name, but somebody many accolades behind his name concurs with my estimation.
She came for you.
She did.
And all I kept thinking is, how can you say there's no plot? I feel like you just summarized it very succinctly.
Succinctly?
I think there's an amazing plot.
I am dying to hear what both of you think about this movie.
I thought it was a great movie. I'm expecting it to get all kinds of awards.
Okay, let's not get crazy here.
The Razzies?
Oh man.
Who is this?
I don't know. Let me defend it before you absolutely decimate it.
Actually, I did not hate it as much as you predicted I would, since I'm not a horror comedy fan.
That's actually high praise, and I hope people take a minute and pause and appreciate that. Yeah. Okay, so I can come out as I'm someone who loves camp horror, art house horror, parody, and slashers. So this movie was absolutely made for me, period. And if you want to know if this movie was made for you, and Gwen, you're going to appreciate this, I'm going to do you a solid and give you a point of comparison. This movie is not Cocaine Bear. No. It's not Gremlins. It's not Pooh going ham in the 100 Acre Woods. Mm-hmm. It is 1981 Student Bodies. If you enjoy that movie in all of its absurdist glory, I think you will enjoy Slaughterhouse.
I agree. And I feel like it has some of that self-reflection.
Absolutely.
Like it kind of pulls apart, and that's something that we'll have to talk about then. It does pull apart horror in the way that a horror comedy should and has not in a while.
Now, would you say that this is a horror comedy or a comedy horror movie? Did you just snort? This is a legit question.
This is great. This is my favorite. I still would put it in horror comedy because the bulk of the plot is, I feel, the horror. I feel like the tropes that are analyzed and, you know, self-reflected upon are horror on the backdrop of comedy. Because when I think comedy horror, I think scary movie.
Something that's just designed for laughs primarily.
That's laughs first.
Yeah, and they tend to go a lot more with your poop humor too.
Yeah,
like, it's just the dumb jokes.
There was
on top
poop
of it.
Humor in this film.
Was there?
When Brianna does a face, the sorority queen bee does a face plant in some.
Oh, correct.
Some
You're right.
Dog
that reminded me of Scream Queens, though, in some ways. And I think that there was nods to Scream Queens.
Yeah,
which also kind of kept it in the horror realm for me. The only thing that put it out was the nods to like Mean Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was Heather-ish, mean girly.
But I feel like the movie really was making a point to like deconstruct modern horror movies. Yeah. And there's a lot there. I wish we were video just to see your face.
I mean, that goes back to the claim that this pulls apart the horror conventions, that it's like meta horror. I need some evidence. How is it reflecting on horror? I mean, it does reference a lot of other movies.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween and The Shining, most obviously for me.
Yeah.
And Gremlins. I mean, you said it's not like Gremlins, but...
No, I think it's a different sensibility from Gremlins.
But it references Halloween because at one point, Alpha the Sloth is sort of batted out the window by our heroine, Emily, and the poor sloth is lying there amidst the broken glass. And then the next time Emily looks, she's gone. And then The Shining. There are numerous scenes where somebody, where the sloth punches its fists.
Through the door.
Mm-hmm.
Which was amazing. Yeah, I was just reading a Variety piece, and she talked about there being nods to collegiate horror, such as 74's Black Christmas, 78's Halloween, and 80's The Shining, are amongst those that were mentioned.
Yeah, those were the most obvious. But those seem like just like almost like parodic nods to those films. And they're sort of the most iconic moments from those films. You know, the moment when Michael Myers is there on the ground and then he's not. The moment when Jack Nicholson, you know, hears Johnny. I'm not sure.
But you got to know horror to know
anything.
That.
And,
and they're far enough back.
Yeah.
They're far enough back that they're referencing films, I mean, 70s and 80s, that you kind of got to like horror to even recognize that it's happening. And I understand that Shining is a big deal, but you still talk to people today that don't watch that and might not know that moment. Oh, you don't.
I don't talk to those people.
And I think that there was just some effort to some commentary. So we will talk about poaching.
Yeah,
and
it's eco-horror.
And the wild animals trade. I think that there was some effort to give a backstory to our monster.
I'm just going to say it. I think it's like Hereditary.
Whoa. Silence.
Yes.
That just took my head off.
And I'm going to say it for one reason, because Hereditary hinges on one shock moment that you don't see coming, right? The girl gets beheaded. In this movie, there's one shock moment in the film when her friend is hit by the car. Mm-hmm. But instead of like gasping and being like traumatized by it, you take that moment and then you laugh. But both of those movies, in terms of like the way it deploys horror, only has one big moment. So really, there's not too much difference between Hereditary, if we're going to call Hereditary a horror movie. Then I think we got to call this one a horror movie, too.
I did not laugh when Madison was hit by the car.
You didn't? No. I howled.
I 100% did. I 100% did.
Okay.
And wasn't it Mean Girls 2 where they get hit by the bus?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see it coming. So much like Hereditary that I did not see coming, I did not see this coming. And I thought that was fantastic. But it instantly reminded me of Hereditary.
It gave me some of the good feelings that I used to get from horror, whether it was in the 80s or from the 90s or even just horror comedy, where I felt that I had to yell at the screen.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. Oh my God.
It was
like, I can't believe they're doing that. Or, oh, I hope they get that one. Or,
yeah.
I just felt that interaction with a horror film that I haven't in a while, because everything is so heady.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when it's so heady, you almost have to be disengaged to engage.
Right.
Like, you're so like, oh my God, what is the point? What is this? Why is this? And sometimes you just want to yell at a screen and you want to feel something. And I think that that's always been my favorite part of a horror film, is the endorphins.
Yeah. And I made the comparison earlier about, you know, that this is really more in line with Student Bodies. And Student Bodies does that. Like, you get the caller who like is the deep breathing, and it's kind of ridiculous. Here we get Alpha, who is a sloth, but so clearly a puppet that the film is like leaving no room for you to take this seriously at all.
No.
And I like that as a viewer, because it's sort of like inviting you in to be a participant in the ridiculousness.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's been so long since we've had an actual horror movie that does that. Even like Cocaine Bear didn't really do it in this way. I mean, this movie really is designed to be watched and to laugh at it, but also to kind of be like shocked and horrified by some of the things that are occurring as well. So
I think about it.
I like that.
If you're a gamer, you get so pumped when there's Easter eggs. Like, whether there's an Easter egg or like a hidden item in a new video game or even my son was talking about in the Mario Brothers movie that came out, there's Easter eggs for other things. And it's like you have to be in the know to pick up on it. And I felt like that's what even put this more into the horror comedy rather than because I had to know more about the horror genre. And I found myself like hitting people sitting next to me being like, do you know what that's from? Do you know what that's from? Did you pick up on that? And that's what I enjoyed about that.
That must have been really annoying for the people here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, and watching any horror movie with me is absolutely annoying.
Okay, yeah.
Because I'm usually yelling at the screen or being like, that's not even scary. That part was stupid. Yeah. I'm always yelling at the screen. I am that the guy. Yeah.
Well, I've heard people have an issue with not being sure how to read alpha. And I think that, too, is like an area where the film is doing something interesting because you have – it starts off where you're positioned to really empathize with Alpha, right? Mm-hmm. This is an animal that's – trauma. Take a drink. This is an animal that's been abducted from its home, right? You know, clearly poaching is a real serious issue. And so – of course, your empathy is with Alpha. But then there comes a switch where Madison, who is Emily's best friend, wants to help return Alpha back to their home. And you're not really sure how to read. When then Alpha turns on Madison.
Yeah.
So people, I had a hard time with that.
Yeah. A few people that I was watching it with had an issue with that because they weren't really sure what was happening. But I really think they're doing something intentional because if you watch, like that tonal shift reminds me a lot of when we suddenly start cheering for Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees. Yeah. You know, it's a villain that we can get behind, if that makes sense. So I think that tonal shift is doing something to sort of echo saying, yes, we watch these horror movies and they have these awful villains. But yet, there's something charismatic about these villains, and we just want to see what more they're going to do.
I felt like it was at some point, too, Alpha just said, well, no, I'm making a choice. I like it better here. So it's almost true. Like, we, you know, I know that they wanted to name him or he or she Alpha because of the sorority and the Greek alphabet and whatnot. But it was true. In their perception, you went from a beta to now you're going to be an Alpha. Even though it seems that they were an alpha anyway back home because they killed the crocodile.
Yeah.
So again, our villain is something that we didn't expect.
Yeah.
You know, and they got you a little bit with that in the beginning too. Like you're, you know, feeling one way and then it switches. But then this villain made a choice and was like, no, I was an alpha there and I'm an alpha here. And I like it here because now I have all these creature, pardon the pun, comforts. Yeah. Where I have follows and I'm on Instagram and everybody
I'm driving
worships me. And yeah, look at that sweet ride.
I did snort. That was my one sort of mark that it was funny. When Alpha was driving, I snorted.
That was a good scene. I mean, his hair was blowing. Yeah. It was like Miami Vice.
Luscious locks in the wind. Yeah. So funny. And I mean, I'm sorry, the scene where Alpha gets into the hospital bed and like takes the selfie to post it. There was a lot of commentary there that I could roll with.
So yeah, so I mean, that's interesting. So Alpha seems to be, well, that, you know, like I'm finding Alpha more and more interesting as we talk about it. Because Alpha, I mean, there's an, little opening scene where Alpha is snatched by an alligator or a crocodile. And I don't know which they have in Panama.
Panama, yeah.
And, but it turns out that Alpha kills the crocodile. So, you know, Alpha's victim, then predator. And the same cycle happens when she's back in the sorority house. Now, she seems to be a victim, suffering the trauma of having been poached, but then becomes a predator after she's kind of named as such. But then when she's dying, like there was that E.T. moment.
There was definitely that E.T. moment.
God. Which also teetered on horror. I was terrified of E.T. as a child. So, hey.
Oh. Well, and there was an earlier E.T. moment, too, when Alpha was in the closet with all the stuffed toys. We get two shots of that. It's like they were saying, in case you missed it the first time, here it is again, E.T. But then at the end, as Alpha's dying, she's looking at the photograph of a jungle, and she's just like, home. And then dies.
That was emotional to me.
So she goes back to kind of victim again. And it is interesting how her character is just, I mean, you could say it's like moving back and forth between victim and predator, Or the film is just sort of saying, we don't care what her character's like. We're just gonna, she's just going to be whatever the hell she wants. Because, you know, she's using a mouse on a computer, driving. Yeah.
But I do love that it went for it. It blurred the boundaries of what you would perceive. Like, this is the last thing on earth that you would think of as a villain.
Yeah.
I mean, look at these other absurd, you know, you have Sharknadoes and you have, you know, mega pythons and snakes on planes and things that are traditionally
bears, grizzlies, things
that traditionally scare you.
Yeah.
And they went for the slowest moving animal. And then they play with your idea of fast and slow, victim and, you know,
victimizer and predator
and, you know, did they have it worse before? Do they not? Like, they just really kind of played a lot with your sympathies and your ideas. Mm-hmm. And I did enjoy that.
I did, too.
Yeah, they really did. And there was a fantastic scene between Emily and Brianna. And we've got to get to the characters, especially those two. Like, Emily's the heroine. Brianna is the uber mean girl. But Brianna's smart. And Emily is really dumb. So by the middle of the film, I was all team Brianna. But there's just like this great exchange between them where Brianna's like, she's like a cute Chucky about Alpha. And Emily's like, she can't plan things. And then Brianna's like, what do you even know about sloths? And Emily's like, I know that they're slow. Brianna's like, does she look slow to you? And then this is my favorite sentence of the film. We're all going to die slow, horrible deaths at the hands of an adorable little killing machine. And I think that adorable little killing machine kind of captures how Alpha just goes back and forth. And maybe that's why the film's funny. Like, she's adorable and cute and victimized and traumatized. And then she is like a violent Chucky.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, the difference between her or them, I'm not really even sure what gender pronouns to use with Alpha. Her.
Yeah. Okay. But who knows?
Is agency, right? Because I think that's the one thing that separates Alpha is that all of the other people, like the humans in this film, are attempting to rob her of her agency in some way.
Oh, yeah,
right?
True. Yeah.
You have the poacher who literally like abducted her out of her home.
Put her in a cage.
You have Emily.
Her.
Yeah. Emily, who she thinks is going to be her friend, but really is only using her to further her own objectives.
Yeah.
All the other girls or young women in the sorority house, they only see her as like a plaything. They don't see her like as an actual living being that should have its own agency. Even Madison.
Who wants to take her,
it's more,
free her.
It's more about Madison's own sort of
her
performance of her politics than it is really about saying what Alpha wants. Because she never consults Alpha. She makes a decision for her.
Yeah. And it finally, when Madison's like, we've got to set her free, that kind of devolves into, well, we'll take her to a shelter.
Right.
And that's what you
get the sloth shelter.
Yeah. That's when you get the sense that Alpha's like, I'm going to kill you, bitch.
Yeah.
You're not taking me to a shelter.
Yeah.
And then also, too, what does that infer about class, too? Because you think about shelter, and I know that it's animals, but you infer a certain idea in your head of who or what may be there, somebody in need. And this animal wants to live that high life, driving Mustangs, climbing walls.
Yeah.
Living her best
life. Popping beers by
That's
the
right.
pool.
Yeah, popping beers.
I mean, I read a review that was like, maybe it was The Guardian, but it was some review that actually thought this movie was good. And they were like, please don't ruin it with sequels. But
true.
I
agree with that.
I kind of like Alpha enough that I might want to see a sequel.
She is cute enough. Like, I wonder if she's not going to turn out to be like sort of a breakout merchandising star. Because that would be fun.
I could see that.
What a good choice to have a female sloth then. So we'll have to talk about, too, what this says about, you know, women. Because, again, you're saying that the one that we're supposed to think is historically ditzy is the smarter one. And the one that we're supposed to be our hero. And we don't get a lot of female villains. You really don't.
Yeah, but Alpha is one. Emily is so dumb. And I mean, I just have to say, because you were saying, Liz, everybody uses Alpha. And, you know, I thought it was striking that everyone wants to take photos with her and post pictures of her on Instagram, which really kind of makes all the more ironic when Alpha is posing with all of her dead victims, like, and putting pictures on Instagram. Like, she completely turns the tables on these people.
I don't feel like it's any different than a lot of those films that we watch where if you dabble in things that you don't understand, it goes awry. Yeah. So it could be something as simple as these dumb kids that, you know, do the talk to me game or play a Ouija board alone. Right. When you do things that you don't understand, like pick up a sloth from an animal trader.
I think it's a good idea to have it at your sorority house without knowing anything about it or how to feed it.
Except then, you're giving it pills that you don't even know what the pills are. So you clearly don't care about the well-being of the sloth.
So her best friend is almost like the traditional trope of the guy at the gas station that's like, I wouldn't go down that road.
That's right.
The harbinger.
Turn back.
And she was right about that.
Well, what do you think the film is doing in terms of gender with the depiction of, like, what's happening in the sorority house with the house mother? There's clearly, like, some fabulous lesbian moments. It seems like the film really wants to go all in on that, which I think is so fun.
The trust showers.
The trust showers.
That was not at my sorority. I will have you
know. I was going to ask you. You were in a sorority.
I was in a sorority.
I was.
Does it get it right, Gwen?
You know what? What I loved about my sorority experience is what I love about my horror comedy is the camp.
Yeah.
Because we still were full of camp. People love their rituals. They love to do, you know, what has been said to be done before, and they like to stick to these ridiculous trust experiments and, you know, so on and so forth. But no, there was no trust showers. I can attest
Worse
to that.
Pity.
There still is this idea of this weird hierarchy. Although, I mean, in our school, there was no huge thing for president of the sorority. We were a much smaller branch, obviously, but there was no politicking like that. There was no, you know, but we also weren't really on cell phones at the time either.
Oh, that's true.
So, that was a very, very different time.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of accepted a lot of times. Like, if somebody's been the president, they're probably going to be the president again. But there was still rules and roles for sure. Allegiances and alliances for sure.
Well, we've definitely seen the role of, like, the house mother in horror films, right?
I mean,
Black Christmas is the one that instantly comes to mind. Do you think this interpretation of it does anything interesting with it?
I didn't understand the point. I mean, we had a house mother who was supposed to be old, who,
listen.
I said this earlier, who seemed to have graduated from college in 2000. So
she's younger than myself.
And at one point, Emily, who is really dumb, did I say that? Emily, our hero, calls the house mother some 60-something-year-old woman.
I know.
And the house mother does correct her and say she's in her 40s. But apparently, if you're a college-age kid, 40s, 60s, it all kind of blurs together. But she was pathetic. I mean, she was pathetic. And I really don't know what to make of her role in the film. Okay, she was this house mother, and all she did was sort of look at photographs of when she was in college. She has a law degree, but she's just sitting around and in the sorority house because her real dream was only ever to be sorority president. Now, I know that's obviously satiric, but what is it satirizing and why?
It is weird, though, because they use her to almost goad what's our main character's name?
Emily.
Goad Emily into running for president.
Yeah.
So she has some, you know, believability at the time. She's like, oh, that's a great idea. You knew my mother, you know, so I should take your word. But then only to come full circle later on and then just shame the woman by saying, wait, so you thought that if you hung out here long enough, we would nominate you president?
Yeah.
Well, you just took life advice from her, woman. So I don't know.
Yeah, it struck me as sort of like a send up of how, like, all movies put women sort of in a group together, and then you can trust no other woman. Like, every woman turns on the other. And it felt like sort of a parody of that, in that, you know, literally people are going missing and nobody notices and nobody cares.
Good
because,
point.
Yeah. So your sisters.
They're not really your sisters.
No, unless you hate your family.
And actually, that came up in a couple of funny lines. At least twice, somebody said some version of, you know, I hate you, but you're my sister and I love you. So, I mean, they were sort of that playing part's a
thing.
On that.
Yeah. That thing is, that's actually a thing.
Oh, okay.
Because I can literally remember going through our hell night. So the culmination of our pledging and sidebar, no, nobody hazes. Yeah, I say ironically.
Okay.
And
no hazing.
No,
ever,
but we just have hell night.
Happened anywhere.
Absolutely, yeah. No. And so we had our hell night. And I remember it literally was the flick of a switch at the end of our hell night where people are belittling and spanking and no trust showers. Yes. And
but you rolled your eyes at the trust showers. Okay.
And they literally flicked on a light, removed your blindfold and said, we're sisters.
We love you.
And I remember in that moment, I was like, I'm going to need a minute. Can you please not touch me?
And they're like, pay to be a part of this too, right?
In theory.
I can't process any more than that. Well, I did read an interview with the director and he said, and here's a quote, as much as I would have loved to have seen what the gory version of Slaughterhouse would have been, what drew me to this movie was the opportunity to make a film that could act as a bit of an introduction or gateway into horror for younger people. So okay. We didn't really mention that this is a PG-13
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
And does that kind of change your impression of it, knowing that it was intended sort of to be like a gateway drug into the harder horror?
Kind of like Gremlins was in the 80s, I think.
You're not wrong.
I loved Gremlins.
Me too.
I would have to watch it again to say how this is different, but...
Well, I know Gwen doesn't like PG-13 horror movies.
I don't.
Typically, yeah. But so I was curious whether you...
I don't care
feel
for
differently for horror comedy.
But when I do think about Gremlins, that's a good way to liken it. I do like Gremlins.
Yeah, Gremlins is great.
So a gateway drug. Yeah, that's fair to say. Because I do traditionally like my horror and my horror comedy with a lot more grotesqueness and body parts and ridiculousness that would be offensive to anybody in this day and age.
It's true.
And this film, I mean, on the one hand, there's kind of a lot of violence in this film, but it's all off screen. And we see parts of it, like we see the curling iron, we see the knives, we see the claws, but we don't actually see most of the violence.
Which is so interesting because the person I watched it with, I said, oh yeah, I'm going to, you know, record a podcast on Slaughterhouse. And they were like, that was really bloody. I'm like, there was no blood in this at all. They thought that it was bloody.
But
the
then again,
power of suggestion.
I think so.
And you think about, so what was that Talk to Me that we watched where it had, again, one moment.
Right.
And it was violent. Mm-hmm. And people are going to remember that and say that was like the most violent movie. Not even close.
So if we finish discussing the house mother and why she was in the film, and I'm still not sure why she's in the film. Other than, I mean, it is, the film does really reference Black Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just a parody.
Yeah. So she's probably a parody of the house mother in the original Black Christmas. And then the PG-13 and violence off screen was done in the remake of Black Christmas.
Oh, that's right. That's
I think
true.
That was one reason we didn't like it. Just to get back to the sloth again quickly, because this is a question that was in the Variety review, which I thought was kind of interesting. Why would someone make a sloth picture if they change everything about the animal to fit what the script needs? So why is this film about a sloth?
Because it's transgressing boundaries, I think.
Of slothhood?
No, of anything that you think would be dangerous or violent.
Because I thought of this when you were talking about all the horror movies about snakes, pythons, sharks, bears, even whales.
Octopus, crabs, birds.
Wolves.
Yeah.
They're all inherently dangerous animals.
Or they flock. Because I know, like, you know, things like birds and things, the larger numbers.
I mean, they are dangerous if they flock. But we only have one sloth here, not a flock of sloths. But sloths aren't dangerous in any way, shape, or form. So I'm just wondering why that choice. I mean, maybe it is about the ironic contradiction between the sloth. You know, when Emily says, all I know is it's slow. So everything we know about sloths is that they're harmless and slow, and this one isn't.
I mean, honestly, that's all I know about sloths is that they're slow.
In some ways, I feel like it's so absurd to take a sloth for a villain in a horror movie. But it is absolutely not absurd to think about some sorority girl finding a niche to become popular and get likes.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And I feel like it would go a lot further to get a sloth than a gerbil. So I feel like in some ways it was absurd, and other ways it was so not.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, especially the reliance on exotic animals to get sort of likes and clicks on social media is definitely a real thing. But I think it's the fact that it's not only a sloth, but it's a puppet of a sloth.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think you could do this film with, like, an actual sloth. Well, wait a minute. Let me I'm, like, suddenly thinking of, like, a masterclass acting sloth. But no, I mean, but I think you need to see that it's, like, something fake so that when violence does, and I saw this in one of the reviews, that when the violence does happen toward Alpha, it's funny.
Instead,
because it would have been upsetting to me. Anytime there's animal violence in horror movies, I hate it.
Yeah.
And I didn't have this reaction because it is so clearly a puppet.
But I also did love that they went out of their way to make the animal trafficker such an a-hole.
Yeah.
Like, he was meant to be sinister, and they didn't have to do that. And I just, especially as a horror film, I feel like they went out of their way to, you know, show you how even that could be disguised. So at first, he looked like your hipster.
Right.
And then they were like, no, once you know what he is, he becomes this greasy, weird guy that lives in a dark, abandoned house. And I don't know, keeps things in cages. And I don't know, he just seemed like a creeper.
Well, that's our first human kill that we get. And so I think the reason that he is positioned so much as a creeper is because you want to make sure that the audience stays aligned with Alpha. Because if she just randomly started killing, like, you know, innocent children, that's going to read really differently than...
Do you know, the opening of the film really reminded me of that film from 1995 called Outbreak. Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, with the monkeys.
Yeah, because the whole that film kind of really starts with human with smugglers bringing this monkey from somewhere in Africa, I can't remember where, into the U.S. and it carries this virus. There were really strong similarities between the two. I guess I kind of think it's interesting that an animal that we would expect to be a vector for disease, because that's how that kind of animal in this kind of smuggling situation. Is usually like that's the only time they come up in film that it breaks that narrative. Like, she's not a vector for disease, she's, you know, like an adorable killing machine.
And if left in Panama, would have only killed crocodiles, which we would have been okay with,
right?
Would we?
I feel like,
okay,
I mean, I don't feel like everybody would be so outraged,
yeah.
And also, that crocodile came for her first.
Circle, it's a circle of life. I mean,
circle of life.
Lion
you don't
King.
You don't think her killing the sorority girls is the circle of life?
Yeah, possibly.
Definitely could be.
But I mean, I guess too, like, people don't talk about the animal trade enough, and it is disgusting, and it is horrible, and it is horrific. Like, and it is a more lucrative business than the drug trade.
Yeah.
And there
I did not know that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Absolutely. There's like almost no sentence for it. You can get caught.
Wow.
And it's such a low sentence. It'll be a year, 2 years, maybe 3 years. It'll be a couple $1,000, which they can afford because they're making that hand over fist. So why wouldn't people do it?
Yeah.
You know, why would it ever stop?
Well, I have to say that is one way in which Alpha is realistic to a sloth then, because I was doing my research on Wikipedia and to sloth, and they are like major victims of poaching and trafficking, you know, being brought to, you know, Western countries, I assume the US, to be a pet. And they're just not made for pets. They need a very specialized ecology.
I think one of the most trafficked animals is the pangolin, and nobody even knows what it is.
Oh, we do after COVID.
Oh,
pangolin was
the pangolin
finger just possibly patient zero.
I know, damn pangolin.
That's also the next horror movie.
And
that
that's also more racism, because I feel like a lot of pangolins come from areas of peoples who were blamed. I get on that. When horror films don't have to do that. I think even talking about shark films, I think it was only Texas Shark and Saw Women's Prison Escape or whatever
you
it was.
Always finding a way to sneak that title in.
Yes. I think that was one of the ones, too, where it was, or it might even be Shark River, where it's people that brought the sharks over from the wild trade, and they actually made them look bad. But a lot of times it's just kind of not even part of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to. But it does make sense that you're saying that it makes a good first kill. And it does. I cheered on that first kill.
I'm interested in what you guys think about this. Another thing I thought about Slaughterhouse, and this is thinking of it as a slasher. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems to be part of this trend in slashers recently to present sort of the ostensible hero of the film, you know, who might be the final girl potentially, as kind of, well, stupid, dumb, and possibly also, like, not a particularly good person.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Bodies, 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 right? Mm-hmm. That's one example where, you know, they're all stupid. And, you know, like, the whole slaughter starts by, well, they're killing themselves, essentially. And Sick, the COVID slasher, where it all began with this girl, you know, going to a party during COVID and kissing a boy who died. I don't think, like, original slashers show, I mean, Jamie Lee Curtis, the final girl in Friday the 13th, none of them were either dumb or kind of not a good person.
I agree with that.
Nancy and Nightmare on Elm Street.
They were definitely more aspirational. I mean, there's nothing.
Sydney and Scream.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're aspirational. They're smart. They try to do the right thing.
Resourceful.
While also being teenagers. I feel like we're getting into a sort of slasher generation that is depicting the younger generation as just in not a very positive light. Mostly because they're obsessed with social media.
Yeah.
That seems to be the root of the problem.
I mean, it literally ends with Selfie, that song.
Yeah.
And it's all about dying.
But think about just how many movies, horror movies in recent years have hinged on social media.
Yeah.
And it likens Alpha with the sorority girls, with the narcissism and the use of the social media.
Yeah.
So now he's being brought closer to
that narcissism, that is the root of so many, the downfall of so many teens in horror movies and slasher movies in particular, that we could tie and Talk to Me too here,
yeah.
You know, with those dumb kids who were doing what they were doing so they could tape it, you know, video it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one guy before he holds the hand, he's like, make sure you film it.
So now if you would have Scream, you would have to add a new rule. Because it's not just, you know, having sex, doing drugs, drinking, defying certain social conventions. It's narcissism.
Narcissism.
Is a new one.
Yeah. Posting pictures of yourself on social media.
Which is so interesting that you mentioned Scream, because in the most recent one, I don't think there is any reference to social media. Is there?
Scoot and Bodies is way better than Scream.
No, but I'm just thinking that's interesting because, like, presumably, like, that Scream franchise is the one that sort of codifies
rules.
The rules of what it means to be a modern slasher. So it's interesting that they deviated from what a lot of other slasher films and horror movies are doing.
There was Scream, I think, wasn't it Scream 4, which was about the kids who wanted to be famous, and so they were videotaping everything.
But that wasn't that like 10 years ago?
Yeah,
15,
it was.
Something
it
like
was
that?
A long time ago.
Yeah, I was surprised that the most recent one didn't have like any of the social media, but it also talked about sort of the true crime obsession. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's a moment where you go in and you sort of see all the artifacts. And so I felt like it was commenting more on like sort of the true crime obsession of the current era, but not through social
not
media,
really,
which is
social
really
media,
interesting to me. Like,
yeah.
I wonder if we've moved past the point where social media is like we just sort of accept now that it's bad. And so maybe horror films don't have to comment on it because
but Slaughterhouse really commented on it. I mean, I feel like
but only because it's a comedy, though,
Instagram seemed crucial to this film.
Yeah.
And I feel like horror comedies are also a little bit more critical of things because they can, because it's like that spoonful of sugar. So if we make you laugh, we can also call you a narcissistic generation and you're going to laugh with us.
But I also think, like, with horror comedy films, like, the way they work is by poking fun at, like, things that are already established.
Yeah.
So it's almost like saying, like, well, okay, the social media presence in these horror films is an established trope at this point.
Yeah.
So now we can sort of deconstruct it through humor.
Yeah.
Fair.
Which I think Slaughterhouse does.
Yeah.
And I think Bodies, Bodies, Bodies does, too.
You know what I thought of? I didn't think about it literally until you said slasher. We also forgot to make mention that it references Nightmare on Elm Street, obviously because of his three toes.
Oh.
Wow. You just
all of
went
his slash
deep.
Marks. Like, you
so
think
Freddy
about
Freddy Krueger has
Freddy
three
Krueger.
Slash marks?
No, but, like, every time he would, you know, he would drag his knifey hands down
his
everything.
Knifey hands.
He would leave those same marks. And so, I know, was that my stretch? But it's so true.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
That is true. That is a reference. Yeah. And the crocodile at the beginning has those slash marks, mm-hmm. just like Freddy Krueger. I was thinking that reminded me of something.
And I didn't think about it until you even just said the word slash, and I was like, oh, duh, Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
That's maybe part of the reason that we chose a sloth that has knifey hands.
Knifey hands.
That would be the technical term. Yeah.
And knifey Alpha hands is really very much in the mold of Freddy Krueger, because you have this like murderous villain that you shouldn't be as entertained by.
That is charismatic and witty, charismatic, even without
funny,
talking,
makes you laugh as they're doing these like reprehensible things.
Yeah, this like
Alpha's a modern day Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
You heard it here first, kids.
But bump.
Well, what else is there to say about Slaughterhouse?
I think we've gone through the things I wanted to talk about. I like it more after our conversation.
We've done it.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I still don't think it's funny.
But
I've come to think that it's interesting after our conversation.
Is there a horror comedy film that you enjoy or have at least thought was funny?
Shaun of the Dead and Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Okay.
I've laughed at both of those.
Fair.
We should do that one at some point. That is a fun movie.
Yeah.
And that taps into what you're afraid of, too.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. See, I start talking about Appalachians, and I'm like, I start
sweating. Well, we think Slaughterhouse is worth your time. If you agree or disagree, let us know. We, too, like the sorority girls, are on social media, and you can find us at Horror Homeroom. We are going to be back in December with Christmas Horror. I'm so excited about this.
Yeah.
So definitely look for that. And in the meantime, we will talk to you later.
Bye.